All right, welcome to another edition of Talk Nerdy to Me. I'm your host, Troy Stegner, and I have a treat for you guys today. I have two longtime residents of Angel Grove with me. I have Farkas Bulkmeyer and Eugene Skolovich. Thank you for speaking with me today, guys.
Thank you for having us. We've enjoyed being had. Wait, do that at the end. And I'm Amy Jo. Okay.
Kimberly, don't do it.
Oh, okay. Like I said, you guys are longtime residents of Angel Grove. I mean, you are the glue that's been holding every one of the series together. It seems like that ties it all together. You guys are the common factor.
That's right. We're sticky and white.
After all of this time, I think Bulk and Skull most likely are running the whole organized crime circuit. You know, all the rackets in Angel Grove, they belong to us. Get it?
Amen.
Totally. Hey, Troy, can you tell Dr. Narvi and I a little bit about your podcast name and the syntax and onomatopoeia, iambic pentameter, with which you state the title of your show? You said, welcome to Talk Nerdy to Me.
Yes, sir. That's the name of the podcast.
and Jason, as a learned educator, would you give Troy a different line reading for that?
Talk nerdy to me. That would be iambic. That would be iambic. Is that true? Tech tetrameter, yeah. Talk dirty to me. Oh God, no. It's got an ending on a two syllable I. But talk dirty to me would be.
Yeah, but that attempt at iambic pentameter. That means it's prose. Yeah, no, that means it's prose, and it is therefore not subject to the rules of iambic pentameter.
Wait, I'm going to double it up though because it's five. So if I do it five, I can make it into ten because you just got to double it up. Yeah. Talk nerdy to me. Talk nerd. Wait. We could do this. Talk nerdy to me. Talk nerdy to me.
Correct. You did it, dude. Ding, ding, ding. Man, every time I think, oh man, I love how much money you spent for college, Narvi. It means so much to me at moments like this.
Thank you very much. And I don't. At moments like this, I have no idea why I spent all that money. Oh my God. Well, go figure this one out. Talk about bang for your buck. You spent $100,000 for your bachelor's. You'll probably only spend 10 to 20 on your master's, but your PhD, I spent $1,200. Did you know that? Yeah. As you go further up, it costs less and less. Did you know that?
I got a couch for that from Rent-A-Center. Actually, I think I ended up paying $12,000, but the original price was $1,200.
Yeah, well, remember, I had to deliver because I was in grad school. I wasn't making any money. I still had to, you know, paying the money. I still had a ding dong. Hi, Paul. You got it back and put it over there.
I thought you were in college, but put it over there. Sorry to interrupt, but thanks for explaining your podcast to us. How long have you been running this here show?
This one about 3-4 years.
Cool, man. Do you do it weekly or do you find that it's more challenging to generate content and book guests?
We started it weekly. We would do a weekly. It started as a promotion for my comic book store. Mm-hmm. We would do, you know, comic book reviews, and it just grew and grew. And now I do a daily nerd brief every day where I give out the pop culture news in the morning.
You do it every day?
Yes, sir. Every morning for the past
before or after the coffee?
After I walk the dogs while I'm drinking the coffee.
Oh, okay. Okay. Fair enough.
That's okay. Fair enough. All right. Now, wait a minute. This you mentioned your comic book store, and that's Zia Comics, right?
Yes.
Where's the location? And so who? Well, in El Paso, shithead. Where else?
Actually, the comic book stores in Las Cruces.
Las Cruces, New Mexico. It's the second largest. Paulie, if you did your homework, that is the second largest city in New Mexico. I mean, come on. It's right next to Olmecilla, where Billy the Kid was sentenced to be hanged for crying out loud. Oh, my goodness, Paulie.
Oh, my God. Las Cruces. So who's watching the store, man?
I have employees.
You have employees. You have employees. Well, you know what? I'm talking to all of your employees right now, and I'm telling them if they even think about not cleaning the windows, we're coming. I mean, we're coming.
Well, we're going to come to El Paso. So, I mean, they still got – they're like, fine. I mean, do what you got to do. We're like an hour away.
Yeah,
you'll see. I don't know. This show should be in Los – I mean, Las Cruces sounds like a cool town.
How many people live there?
I think it just passed 100,000 last year.
Gotcha. How many dead people
awesome.
Are there?
Probably two or three times that they found.
Okay, listen, I'm not kidding you. Okay, so the town right next to me has more dead people than living people. It's like basically it's a giant graveyard and then a few houses.
Yeah, he's telling the truth.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the truth. That's Forest Park.
They caucus with the Democrats.
Actually, they would probably be Democrats because they were screaming anarchy. It's the burial ground of the anarchists from the Haymarket riot.
Okay, so, you know. I recall that they were supposed to have burned all of those houses down.
They were supposed to, but they didn't. They weren't good anarchists. I mean, they were terrible anarchists. They're like, you know what? Anarchy these days. I'm gonna put no milk in my cereal. They're like, it works for me. All right, let's vote on that. No, you can't. You're an anarchist. Damn it.
Nice.
Inept anarchists.
So you got this comic book convention, this pop culture convention in El Paso that we're going to be guests at.
Absolutely. Featured guest.
That's awesome.
Featured. Nice. Can we go down to Juarez right next door?
It's not advised, but yeah, you can do that.
You can do whatever you want. It's like a free country.
They like to swing people off of bridges there.
Oh my God. Juarez. I love
adventure sports.
Watch Sicario. It'll change your mind.
This is the worst bungee jump ever. So we were supposed to,
you know,
did Frank tell you about this?
Hey, Narvi.
Yo.
Well, you know, we're not the only special guests at this event, right?
Right.
Not only is Jason David Frank, the original Green Ranger, going to be there with us, he has also been on the text thread of Troy, Narvi, and myself as we sent no less than 3,000 messages together as we boneheadedly tried to put this call together.
Yep. And Frank just kind of sat back and just watched the chaos happen.
You know, like, I want to think that he didn't hit ignore this thread, and so I'm just going to do that. Okay?
Yeah, absolutely. He was watching it carefully, like a spectator sport.
Moderating.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Or moderating.
Remember those little ant farms, and you know, that you have, you know, if the human being watches the ants, does it screw up the experiment? He's the human being, and we are the ants.
Boy, I never realized that. Well, actually, you know, after Jason Frank came into his own and found his true destiny as Lord Drakon, I saw a different side of him. It was a megalomaniacal side.
I thought it was Drakon, but this Drakon, I love. A bunch of guys dressed as Dr. Dre. Like, that's it. Like, there's a whole style of people dressed as Dr. Dre. Drakon.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know what? Boom Comics and Saban and Hasbro better call the lawyers, because I believe there is a Dr. Drakon.
Is there? Oh, man.
I don't know. I made that up. I have no idea. You made that up.
Patent pending.
Totally.
So what are we talking about, Troy?
I thought you guys were interviewing me for a second.
Well, you know what? We will fill up the hour, Troy. Make no mistake. But you know,
we'll go as long as you guys want to. I did have a quick question for you guys. How did you guys even get the audition for the roles for this for Bulk and Skull?
Well, I'll let Paulie take that one, because he kind of went out to the frontier and built a fort first.
Well, as is not uncommon for any professional actor of that era, one would have a talent agent. And that agent generally is a subscriber at that time, to a company called Breakdown Services. That company's services entailed putting a teletype copier printer into offices. And this is very much how the United States National Defense, NORAD ran their operation in the 60s and in the 70s it came into the office world. And then the 80s and 90s, it started to get used for, you know, entertainment. And so that machine would spit out a daily roster of roles that producers were looking to cast and looking to set appointments to see people that were professionally affiliated with a talent agent. And so that's why, you know, for actors, it's so, I'm sorry, Narby?
I said spit is the proper word. Plenty of expectorant. Ah.
Yeah, you know, thanks for that interjection. Really, really, very useful.
I'm just saying, you know, we're going back into history. We need to color the history for people. People don't like podcasts that are in black and white.
Oh, that's right, man. Nobody wants to watch black and white podcasts anymore.
No, it's well, you know, the Technicolor podcast. Technicolor podcast.
Yeah, Technicolor phlegm in the podcast. So now there's a we just got Nickelodeon and we're covered in it. Thank you.
Green, green, green.
That's a good
exactly. So that yeah, it totally is.
Technicolor phlegm.
Nickelodeon. Yeah, Technicolor phlegm. Oh my god. All right. So Jason Narvey and I are professional actors. In the 90s, apparently, the very early, how about the 90? It was the 90.
The 90.
And yeah. So, yeah. And so we both were kind of out there working jobs and doing auditions when our agent would get a printout from Breakdown Services that would say, hey, I need so-and-so. Occasionally, you know, I would get called for Lederhosen clad beer commercials and Jason would get called for James Dean lookalikes, but without the balls.
It's kind of vice versa. I get the auditions that wanted me to look like a scrotum sack. They're like, you guys have any ugly people with big bulbous noses? They're like, oh, we got the guy for you. You don't want him.
You know what? Well, you know, very much like me, Narvi, when I would show up to an audition and every other competent fat guy in town was sitting in the same room, dressed the same outfit as me, you know, I can imagine the mugshot lineup festival that your auditions were like.
Oh, my God. I saw the same three guys, and each one of us was the most neglected guy at their particular agency. Like other people exactly. At my agency, they're all like, you know, Brandon and Trevor, and they're all like 902 and 0. This freaking guy.
I know. If by chance you needed, like, some brass knuckles, you could say, hey, fellas, anybody bring the wrecking gear? And, like, four of them would be like, yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God.
So there you go. So look, we get called for auditions, but at different times. I get a call earlier than Jason, mm-hmm. and I have to go to a building, and I am the first one on the list. And so I show up early, and they're not ready for me up on the fourth floor of the original Saban building in Burbank, California, on Olive and Alameda. the fact that I showed up early was actually welcomed by them because Tony Oliver, the original voice of Rick Hunter in Robotech, as well as one of our writers and producers, he was being made to play the role they wanted me for in a rehearsal with Walter Jones. And so Tony was like, oh, thank God, the fat guy's here. Hey, can you step in? All right, you're you know, jerk number five or whatever, number two or whatever I was. Mm. It's a matter of some contention.
I think you're jerk number one. You're the number one jerk that I know, Paul.
You know, that's what I always thought to myself, too. And if I, and during, especially during that shoot, I was like, I should be the number one jerk. I should be. So I showed up for this rehearsal, and because of my theatrical training and, of course, kismet, because show business is not about being good or being educated. It's about having good timing. So if you're good in Vegas, come to Hollywood because – you know, the unworthy abound, but you are going to make it because you are awesome. So I nailed it. I think for moment one, like I had the role from like the first, honestly, 12 seconds I walked in the door and kept it forever and won't let go until I drop over dead. Now, after we did that original pilot where my character was following like another punk leader,
And your
Narvi, what was that guy's what was his name again?
His real name was Bobby, but his character was Punk Number
Bobby.
One. Bobby was playing
Bobby.
Punk Number One, and you were playing Punk Number Two or Three, actually. That
I thought it was for two, but I don't know. People tell me it's five in some scripts.
Yeah,
So the thing about Bobby is he was a pretty good actor, but he couldn't play malevolent. Like, he was too nice. Like, he was really great, but then when they made us like more evil, he kind of was like, and so they started looking for someone else.
Oh.
And while they were looking for someone else, after we shot the promo pilot, they came to me and said, "Hey, what do you think about Gilligan and Skipper?" I'm like, "Creepy, but desert island. What do you think about Abbott and Costello?" I was like, "Creepy, because, you know, Eddie Murphy." "What do you think about Laurel and Hardy?" "Creepy, like two grown men that live together and do jobs but suck at it."
And
so,
you know,
I mean, you, this just goes on, you know, it really does.
Well, okay,
how about Cain and Abel? Wait a minute.
Wait a minute. Well, considering that I have a gash on my forehead right now, and I'm talking, I better avoid that one. Well, you know what, though? I just learned. I never thought about this. Actually, if you do the chronology, I was in the room before Pauly, but not in a positive way. What happened was, when they cast as Pauly said, he went in there with Walt. You know, he was auditioning. Walt was there for his callback, I'm guessing. I was there for the original cattle call when Walt would have gotten cast, actually, because I was up for this pilot called Phantoms, and they needed some geeky guy that could work out, you know.
Wait a minute. Don't tell me you're going to pretend you were the original Blue Ranger.
I never said I was. I said they wanted someone geeky and ugly, and they went with David Yost instead, who was chiseled and gorgeous.
Ow!
So, as you see, he was getting in my turf. He was in my turf, you know.
Okay, wait a minute. So we skipped over the salient bit. Is that you auditioned to be Billy Cranston?
Exactly. I auditioned for Billy. It was a cattle
call.
And
you got called back how many times?
Zero. Not a single time.
Okay. Hey, I'm sorry. I didn't hear a number there. What was the
zero?
Was there a
zero's a placeholder?
Okay, I'm sorry. There's not an actual value.
Yeah, so. I'm a placeholder. Thank you. But wait. There is a number, and you know what that number is? Number one, because I was in the room first. I never knew that. Actually,
well, you know what?
So what happened was they rejected my body. I almost said ass, but I didn't know what the demographic is here, so I'll refrain from that. So my anal cavity
too late.
There, puckered. Okay.
Oh, God. Oh. Come on.
Gotta get that out of your head. So
no, you know you don't.
I didn't say put my puckered anal on your head.
No, stop it. Stop.
Oh, God, this is terrible.
This is like the worst bleeping ever. It's just me screaming over your profanity.
Oh, crap on my head. Okay,
I know Jason well. He needs a moment to compose himself.
Oh, okay, I am now composed. I'm going to read some of this Hebrew text. Okay, I'm good to go. All right, so they put me on a stack of rejects. You know, they didn't even give me a callback. And so after Bobby had been cast, and they felt that he didn't work well as a sidekick either, from what I recall you telling me, Pauly. He was taller. He was a great stuntman. But he didn't work well as a sidekick, and Pauly was a funnier actor, I think, was part of it. So they're like, we need to get rid of this guy, and we're going to start principal photography in less than a week at that point. It was in like 5 days. So they're like, we need a reject. So let's go to our pile of rejects. And they pulled out a pile of rejects, and they were all skinny, bulbous guys like me that I've seen at 1,000 auditions that basically had been shucked aside by their respective agencies for people that looked like, I don't know, David Yost. And then they pulled us all together. And I said, well, they may be ugly like me, but I'm a bigger jerk than all of them combined. And I proved it in the audition room. They said, hey, I know another jerk that you would work well with. And they threw me in the, they took me on set my second day for my callback and paired me up with Paulie. And the rest is history.
Yeah, that sounds really weird to say, but it is history, I suppose.
It really is, actually, when you think about it. It was really, it was a complete happenstance. People always ask us whether or not, you know, we were buddies before, whether we had worked together before. And the fact of the matter is, we never worked together, but we had the same vernacular. Because we loved slapstick comedy, we had done theater, we had similar backgrounds, so we were able to play the same game together, you know.
Okay, now to be clear, what we both came from were individually respective but separately functioning incestuous cesspools of community theater.
There, it's a good way to put it. There you go.
Thank you.
You paint such a pretty picture.
Oh, did he paint a pretty picture? That must not have been community. Hang on, let's go back.
Well, there you go. So, I mean, and I mean, like I said before, there are so many people that are talented and don't get a chance to do what they really are feel like they are called to do in show business. And so, we were among the 5% of the 5%. That gets lucky and has a gig, and then 5% of that has a gig that lasts longer than 2 years.
Yeah.
I mean, to go on as long as we did, Troy, truly makes it a remarkable a bit of fortune for two jerk-offs, you know. I mean, more stumbling, loping morons.
Loping morons.
All right. Well, occasionally there was a lope. But you know, what this really points to is that there are so many talented people in the world, and we see this all the time. People, unrequited talent is like broken hearts, man. Oh, you want me to get a dump truck? I'll go pick up a million for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's the damn thing. I mean, so many of – I've said this before. Some of the most talented actors I ever knew, most talented artists dropped out at some point because they just they didn't get lucky. At some point, you know, you know, and that's all it boils down to. They didn't get the opportunity for whatever reason. It didn't happen, you know, and they're like, I'm too talented and I'm too smart to deal with this crap. So they went and did something else with their lives, you know?
Sure. Or life intervenes and you start shooting out children like cannonballs, you know, or your mom gets sick, or, you know, you lose a foot in a shop accident. You know what I mean? It's tough to do the karate.
That's right.
You know, for whatever myriad of reasons, life often will conspire to try to rob us of the dreams that we've held for a long time. And as a human being, when that happens, and people listening to this are living it, have lived it, or will live it, the answer is, how do we answer that feeling? How do we fight what we feel is true inside of ourselves regarding our potential, and fight or make friends with that feeling? Yeah. And some of us are risk averse, and we decide we're going to get that job because I got a family and I got responsibilities, or I don't want to hear my mom talk about this one more second of my life, or I'm going to choke her to death. I have to get a job, or I got to go to college, or I got to join the military, right? Or I'm going to join the excuse me, there was something that I'm going to become a priest. So, in my case, I got the weird, like, lottery, like, resolution of that, where I was like, holy shit, this is actually happening. But before it happened, Troy, I had resolved to myself that I knew this was risky personally, and that I would want to be performing no matter what, for a dollar, for 0 cents, for the rest of my life, because I liked how it felt to make other people laugh.
Yeah.
And I found the value in that process. And that's the thing that Jason and I share. Now, it's been disturbing to watch the Kardashians and to watch social media rise, to watch the YouTube and the Me Show become the thing that blew up, you know, a 15 minutes of fame, Warhol. Now it's 5.7 seconds of fame.
Yeah.
And the problem is some people spend so much it personally and professionally and psychically and emotionally to try and achieve something that one should really be looking at the process, because only there does true guaranteed satisfaction live.
Yeah. And you know, that's another thing too. You think about it. The thing about reality TV, I mean, there are talented people that work in it. I mean, I know a lot of people that produce it, and therefore they're constantly struggling to take all these pieces and create a story out of it. You know, and those people I find are some of the most satisfied people in reality TV. And I think that's
hey,
the way
four of the Kardashians are awesome.
Yeah. I didn't say any of them. I'm saying whoever's producing. No, what I'm saying in general is as an actor, I mean, there's a strange thing about I was talking about validation. And as actors, you know, yeah, there's this part of us that wants validation. You know, of course, there's the other type of actor that wants to be kind of the reclusive artist. I don't care if people love what I do. Well, they're not going to come see you then, are they? So there's always this thing, found a love in the art where you need validation because you need someone to see what you're doing. You know, of all the arts, this is, you know, performance is the hardest art to do in a vacuum, you know. So if you go about, if you're just contrition, since so few people are able to do it, you're in for a world of hurt. You know, if you just find to love, like Paulie said, the process, love the storytelling, love the interaction with the audience, you know, you can find ways to be fulfilled without ever becoming rich, famous, you know.
Wow. That was a lot to take in. After you guys did the pilot, did you ever envision this going on for 25 plus years?
God, no. Have you seen it?
Yeah. That's why I'm asking the question. No, actually,
the first episode where where you see the morphing sequence and they morph, and then you see the Zords running across the landscape. It's like six animal cracker boxes with like Japanese dude fingers coming out of the side, and like somebody blowing like baby powder into the shot.
Yeah.
You know, it was so like, honestly, when we first saw it, Narvi and I just like, we didn't even move our necks. Our whole bodies moved and we turned to each other and we were like, shit, we're done in like 6 months.
Oh my God. Yeah. And you know, that's the thing. We had such a hard time picturing what it was going to be in our heads, you know? So when we actually saw it, we're like, oh God, this is not going to last. You know, but I do remember at one point when we saw, I don't remember if it was the Japanese version or the first cut episode, where I'm like, you know what though? It did remind me vaguely of Voltron, you know? And
totally.
We had no live action realizations of any of the Japanese, you know, what a lot of people at that point were calling Japanimation, I think, still, before people were savvy. So I'm like, you know, there's a snowball's chance in hell that we won't be unemployed in 6 months, but let's spend all that money as quickly as we can because we will be unemployed. When I say all that money, I should say both of that money, both the dollars, because we made $2 all season.
You know what, Narvi? Now that ownership of the show has changed hands, mm-hmm. I think it might be appropriate to reveal to the world mm-hmm. the dollar amount of what you and I were paid weekly during the first 3.5 years of Power Rangers.
All right, that sounds.
Oh, hold on a sec. Hold on a second. I'm opening a bag of chips.
Paulie and I. Interesting, huh? We were paid. You munching? You ready for your spit take, Paulie and I? The kingly sum of $500 a week.
Ow.
Oh, yeah, that's a lot of money, right? I mean, especially after taxes, we were taking home $325. And of course,
it was like it was like 360 something.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you this: like, if you adjust for inflation back to the Egyptian times, it's a princely sum. However, going back to the 90s, it was pretty much a minimum wage job.
It was when you boiled it down to per hour, I think.
Correct. And I believe the mathematics worked out to we were making like $380 an hour.
Yeah, but you know, we thought we were in hog heaven because we were getting paid to do what we like for 6 months. 6 months never ends. 6 whole months to make that kind of money. My God. You know, I was living at my mom's, so I didn't have much rent that I had to pay, you know. Oh my God. And remember, Paulie, I was saying,
and ultimately, honestly, it could have been $200 a week, and I would have been like, okay, because clearly. You know, it's that chance, that it's that thing you've been working for. So you take it no matter what it is. And then thereafter, you never say no and you obey every command.
Well, and both of us, remember, we both had gas guzzlers because our cars were both from the – well, yours was from the 70s, so you had the new car. Mine was from the 60s. So
it's okay. I broke up. I, dude, to be fair, I broke up with her.
Oh my God! But the great thing is your alimony is still staying at the 1990s rate, so you're only having to pay her $120 a week. It's great.
I still got the spit take. Oh God! Oh, so funny.
Oh my God!
But with you guys all being so young on the show and with all that cash in your pocket, was there all kinds of pranks you guys were playing on each other?
Oh God. I mean, that's all we did. I mean, the pranks that we did, we probably couldn't repeat. I mean, the first season at least. I mean, they got more tame. Like, the one that we always say at cons was when we took all of Catherine Sutherland's furniture out of her dressing room and then we put it in Steve's room, I think. And then we took all the furniture out of every dressing room and put it all in Catherine's room so she couldn't even get into her room. So there was that.
There was, before we did that, very early, Amy Jo complained to producers because a cutlass came through the wall as she was putting her makeup on. It was 8 inches from her head.
It was not a cutlass. It was a broadsword. Come on, AJ. Come on.
So she didn't like that very much. And then there was the time Narvi took his shoe at my – oh, sorry. Wrong story. Sorry. Then there was the time that we drew a tropical vacation on the walls of the talent hallway because they wouldn't give us any time off.
That's
right. And we were like, it's been a year and a half. And they were like, keep shooting, dogs.
And then there was that one time we had way too many takes of – we had like 20 takes of a shot. And normally if it's not done in three takes, we're like, well, it wasn't worth getting. These are a bunch of three-year-olds. What do they know about – fine film. So we drew on the walls in the talent hallway, and then we burned a script in effigy again in talent hallway. I'm telling you, there's just stuff that we see. Wait a minute, these aren't really so much pranks, Paulie, now that I think about it, as they went,
they're crying for help. These are civil actions.
Oh <my God. laughs> So to answer your question,
Selma, Alabama.
Oh my God. Larceny, arson. Yeah, these aren't pranks. So to answer your question, no, we never pulled any pranks that were funny.
But felonies, yes.
Yeah.
Felonies, yes.
Misdemeanors. No conviction.
No convictions.
Well, you mentioned earlier about Mr. Narvi being a learned man. Actually, very learned. We've got
Mr. Narvi is my father. You can call me that.
We've got a PhD in our presidents, right?
In our presidents?
Our presence.
Oh, in our presence, yeah. No.
My tongue got thick for a second.
My tongue got thick. Don't you mind.
My tongue. My tongue.
Yes, that's right. I am a
He is. Yeah.
Yep.
A
B.
No, he used to be like a bona fide like pseudo intellectual, and he would just spout this bullshit all the time. And then after he got his PhD, I was like, oh my God, I can't say that anymore about him.
Yep. You know what I need to do is shrink it down and laminate it and put it in my wallet. So it's like, where do you get off saying that? Oh, I see. Thank you. Just whip it out right there. Batman and he's throwing bats. There you go.
They're called batarangs.
Okay, then I'll call it my PhD a ring, so it'll be called my fedarang. That's my fatarang.
Okay, your skullarang. In Turbo, you guys got to start doing some voice acting because you were played by chimpanzees. Did you find the voice acting was harder than the actual being physically on set?
You know, Troy.
Oh, hell no way.
The hard part was looking for the first time at a true reflection of ourselves.
Well said. Yeah,
but you know, the fact is, you can show up to record ADR dressed in underwear if you're on time and you're totally cool. They don't give a shit. And it's totally fine. So that was the great benefit of being monkeys. And for me personally, I was directing the series at that time, so I was being paid to play Bulkmeyer as a monkey, directing the show with the monkey in it. And my girlfriend and I were traveling places with all of that money. Because to be totally fair, when we talk about our wages being very low in the beginning, they certainly did adjust over time to be more fair and become a living wage within about within about 5 years of the inception of the series. Things had come around for us because there was movies and such. So we were doing better. Yeah. But certainly when they buy the cast 5 color-coded Suzuki Samurais as a gift and they give them to them in front of you in the parking lot of the studio.
Yeah, hey, ask
easy
us.
Easy to get a little bitter.
Ask us what Bulk and Skull got that Christmas. Go ahead. Ask what we got. They got Suzuki Samurais. We
hey, Narby,
got
Narby,
yeah, yeah,
Narby,
Polly.
Narby, hey, yeah, what, yeah. What did Bulk and Skull get that Christmas?
We got new shirts to go to the party to see them be given Suzuki Samurais.
Although, okay, Narby, since that happened, since we were so wounded and so offended, I have seen exactly 18 Suzuki Samurais running and on the road, okay? Now, and that is since 1995. And then just recently, I saw it was supposed to be red, but it was orange, one on the 5 freeway driving alongside me. And I fumbled with my phone so I could send a picture of it to Austin St. John to ask him if his was still running.
They gave Austin a Suzuki? They gave Austin a Suzuki? Did they give you a Suzuki?
No.
Mother son.
What did you guys get?
Oh, gosh. We got write-ups for arson.
We stuck a dirty rag in the gas tank. Suzuki Samurai.
You know, Troy, it's funny. Whenever people come up to me in public and they're or at cons or whatever, and they're like, I love Bulk and Skull. Bulk and Skull are the only reason I watch that show. Bulk and Skull! I like try to touch them on the upper shoulder and I'm like, have you been in trouble for shoplifting or small acts of arson? And I'm telling you, it's 89% people just pause for 2 beats and they just kind of like go, was. In the past. You know what? Rock on, my arsonist juvenile delinquent brothers and sisters. Rock on. After you feed the baby.
More currently, you Paul have actually is non-canon, but you're playing an actual Power Ranger on Hyperforce.
First of all, Troy, call me Paulie. All right?
Paulie. Okay. We can do that, Paulie.
I mean, just Paulie. I mean, thanks. Thank you. I'm an American citizen. I got rights. I'm allowed to change my name. I'm a Power Ranger. Are you offended, Jason? You didn't know I was a Power Ranger?
You're what?
A Yellow Ranger.
What?
I know. What I know. The worst, honestly, the worst color to put a fat guy in. Yellow. How about the...
Paulie, did you get a Suzuki Samurai? Did they give you a Suzuki Samurai? Because that's what they do with Rangers. They give them Suzuki Samurai. Did you get a Suzuki Samurai?
Here's the thing. If you got a Transformer, if you got a Transformer yellow Suzuki, if you got a yellow Suzuki Samurai, listen to me. If you got a hey, jerk, you're like the Parrot Ranger in the Boom comics. You're the Purple Ranger, so shut up.
Wait, and what Ranger? You're the Purple in the Boom comics?
Yellow. Oh, you're funny. All right. Okay. Thank you. Thanks. So what I was going to say is, if you got a transforming yellow Suzuki Samurai after it transformed into your Zord, it would still look like a VCR from like 1998.
Oh my god! Isn't that funny? You get something that sucks and transforms into something that sucks even more.
Like the worst. And I know it was. I know it was all like CDs and shit by then. But you know what? I still had a VCR in 1998.
Oh my god.
Yeah, did you have a VCR in 1998, Troy?
I still have one.
Is it blinking 12 o'clock?
Yes.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, on Hyperforce, like I said, it's not canon, if I'm correct. Is that right?
That is incorrect.
Oh,
you, sir, are incorrect.
So it will be canon.
Dude, we are in, man. I mean, it's a unique situation right now with the brand. You know when Hasbro buys you?
Like it happens. You know that day when Hasbro buys you?
Well, I mean, things happen. I mean, you become part of a large corporate content generation studio entity. And Saban Brands and Saban Entertainment and then Saban Brands was never that. They were very focused on just a few important brands for them. And so the Disney years were, of course, a little different, as once you get into that tornado, you know, the milk is totally safe. You know, everything is. They pasteurize the shit out of it. And that's its own host of issues that real fans may or may not agree with me on those years, but they did make a good faith effort to continue by keeping several very key crew members, such as Tarkington. Tark. They kept Tark for, and he's still with them to this day. And he really is a brand ambassador for that brand and always was. But you know that whole kind of that Hasbro thing, it is a huge Imperial Star Destroyer, you know, rolling over our poor, peaceful planet. But see, here's the thing. Like, I mean, remember that one Lego thing? Remember that Lego thing with the Stormtrooper Kubrick? You know, I'm like, what's so bad about the Empire? The Empire's pretty awesome. Look, they got a coffee machine. It spits out whatever you want. Check, look at the uniform. So shiny. Look at this blaster, dude. But of course, they do have a weight limit. So you have to go into like some sort of physical training or something in order to become an Imperial Stormtrooper. But I'm working on it. I'm in the early entry program.
Speaking of that, how would you guys like to be in one of the Star Wars movies?
Well, whoa, that was quite a leap of faith. I mean, that's
well, I'm
like...
thinking Tag and Bink. I don't know if you're familiar with those characters. You guys would be perfect.
Were you about to say faith? Jason, were you about to say faith? That's a leap of faith.
That's a leap of faith. I almost did, and that didn't seem like the right thing. Like, if you pray really, really well, and you believe, you know your Bible, and you say the right prayers, and someday you will be on Tatooine. That's, I don't think that's how religion works. Why is it
got to be about the Bible, man? There's so many like heavy duty religious texts that are older than anyone who's alive can remember who wrote them.
All right, well, tell me who wrote them.
What, white people?
I ain't touching that. I am not gonna touch that one. Oh my goodness. So Star Wars, yeah, we'll do Star Wars.
Well, white people. specifically Tag and Bink, who are these characters who are kind of like the fringes, and they're the impetus behind all the big events, kind of a Forrest Gump type thing.
I am not impetus. I went to the doctor.
All right. So, okay, can we just get Tag and Bink out of the way right now and just say plagiarism? that is not even homage. That is an injudicious – that's not a word – that is a judicious list. Okay, that's not a word either.
Sorry, injudicious that, sounds like a word. I've got a PhD.
That's not a word.
I am going to coin that term. I'm going to write an article. Oh, that's what PhDs do. We come up with words and we use them in ways that people never really thought of, or at least people that, you know, never thought that they could get away with it. But now that I've got a PhD, injudicious is an official word. I'm going to write an article.
All right. And does that mean – does that mean Rosencrantz and Guildenstern get a paycheck every time someone A, makes them the primary characters in the movie, or B, knocks off their characters entirely in a lackluster homage?
Well, they don't get the money, but Tom Stoppard sure as hell does.
I know, but does he get to approve your actual casting and production? Does he have to come and like sit there in the fourth row
Albie used to. Edward Albie used to. He wouldn't show up, but he'd ask you to send cast lists because, you know, he felt they were the way he wrote the characters was so specific and he believed in the characters so much. And when there was undertones of it, like in, he got a lot of flack for Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. Someone wanted to cast one of the characters as African-American. And he said, well, the problem is that character is supposed to be like a wunderkind. I mean, the fact that it's blonde hair, blue-eyed, and kind of a threat to this guy who's anything less than an Anglo-Saxon strong man means that character, you can't flip the genders on it. So he would do that a lot. Or if you try to cast a young person as an older person, really be like, can't do it. He was notorious for that.
You know, didn't Albie co-wrote the wonderful newsroom romp, The Front Page?
Oh, you know what? I'm not familiar with that one.
I don't know. I it might have been Heck. Sorry.
That's okay.
Four letter last names. Onomatopoeia.
Newsroom. Oh man, now it's gonna bother me. That's gonna bother me.
All right, good. That's what I want. I don't have a PhD, and now I've bothered one.
Now you've no bother. Oh, good. I can't be bothered. Of course, I can be bothered. Are you talking about? Are you talking about the film, or are you talking about a play?
It's a play initially, but okay. Yeah, it was a play initially, and definitely is a film as well. It's one of those like ridiculous 39, 40, 41, 42 kind of, like, it might be a little later, but it's like, you know, that whole ridiculous pace of dialogue where like you really got to go see this play four times so you can catch everything that they say, because apparently there's a time limit in the theater and they have to pay extra.
Yeah. 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 I know that one. Wait a minute. All right. Sorry. So I was looking up Newsroom and Albie, and this is what a waste of your interview. I am so sorry, Troy. I went down the wormhole.
Narvi, it's called The Front Page. The front page.
The front page. Yes.
So, am I right?
Okay. No, Albie has been on the front page, but I don't know the front page. I don't know that one. Oh, wait a minute. No, that's an older one, isn't it? That's one of his older ones. Oh my goodness! Look at you. You stumped me. You stumped the chump. yeah, that was. Yep, the front page. You're absolute son of a. I gotta turn on my PhD.
Hey kids, save the $100,000. Go to a school of hard knocks like Paulie.
It only got 64 performances, and then it died mercifully.
Hey, you have a pie hole? I believe you do.
I do. I do have a pie hole. Damn. Oh man, you got me on that one. All right. Okay, Troy. What else you want to ruin me with?
Do you guys have any projects you're doing now that you'd like to share? Or that you're
I'm
able
sorry.
to?
Okay. All right.
No, I just got cast in a new play by Edward Albee called The Front Page. It's a takeoff.
No, you have to say, hey, I just got cast in a new play by Edward Albee.
It's about the front page of the newspaper. See, the front page is coming back. I'm telling you, all the kids are going to love the front page.
So I'm taking that as a no.
No, he's doing things. Come on, yes. Tell him what you're doing. You're making stuff.
I'm making stuff. So next summer, I'm going to be doing a revival of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest in Chicago. So that should be pretty cool.
Who are you playing?
I'm playing Danny DeVito's role. McMurphy, of course. McMurphy. Yeah, actually, that's pretty cool. I'm actually very excited about it, and I'm sure most people are excited to see me get shock treatment. You know, so I'm excited.
Is there anything else that's current that you want to say before you tell us about? Dun, dun. Dun, 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 dun.
Oh! Well, we just closed that one. I've been working. I was working with the. I just closed a show called In the Soundless Isle, where we were working with survivors of the USS Indianapolis, which, as you may or may not know, was the greatest naval disaster in the U.S. naval history. It was sunk during World War II by a Japanese torpedo. About 1,100 men went into the water. 1,100 men were on the ship. It was torpedoed. 900 went into the water, and just over 300 made it out. The rest died of exposure or were eaten by sharks. So we just did that one last year as a revival in honor of the Indianapolis folks, and during their yearly reunion. I was privileged to be able to be the keynote speaker at that and kind of give a little bit of insight into the life and psychology legacy of their beloved Captain McVeigh, who unfortunately committed suicide years after the sinking because he was largely blamed for it, even though history, the record says he was not. So it's kind of exciting.
He has been exonerated.
He was actually finally exonerated in the 90s, and he was pardoned by President Clinton. So that's how recently he actually had the record cleared, actually. So it's
your record was not exonerated in the 90s. In fact, it was made exponentially worse.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we don't want to get into the things that I did in the 90s, and I did have I used my real name. I mean Jason Narvi is clearly a made-up name. So you know, my other name, we shouldn't go into my criminal record, Paul. How about you, Paul?
Your other name, wait a minute. Aren't you Jason Harvey from the Wonder Years?
No, it's Jason Hervey. I'm Jason Hervey from the Wonder Years.
Oh, Jason yeah. Hervey.
Jason Hervey. That's
I see. Hey, yeah. Narvi. Hey, Narvi. Yeah. Are there any other things brewing theatrically for you besides Cuckoo's Nest in your role as theater chair at Concordia University Chicago?
Yes, I'm going to be directing Sweeney Todd in April with a small cast of actor musicians is what we hope to be doing. So stay tuned for that. That's very exciting.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really? For
yeah,
what,
yeah.
Like a live period instruments live on stage for Sweeney Todd?
Yeah, we're going to use so basically rather than have an orchestra in the pit, the actors themselves will play the instruments so that you're never under the illusion that you're seeing a realistic play, although of course the framing of it is that you're seeing a troupe of Victorian actors playing this basic slasher film on stage. So that's really cool. So the actors are going to have to know how to play the instruments. They're always going to be on stage. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's kind of think Brecht, you know, Three Penny Opera, that kind of feel.
Never tell me to think Brecht. That is a bad idea.
Sorry, let me see. Think Brecht is the
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
You are.
Although I do have to point out that if you're not going to give your lead actor a real straight razor, then the musicians have to have fake instruments.
Damn it. All right, I think you're right. So you know what that means is I'm going to have to triple my cast because every night we have like six bodies.
Oop, lost another one. Bring the bag.
Bring the bag. It was so
well, no, just give it to the prop. Dude, give it to the prop department. Down the chute, right there, making the pies for tomorrow night. It's going to be awesome.
Well, you know, there was a production. I just found out about this. There was a production in New York that they actually did in a pie shop. So you could order meat pies, and the production went on around you. And I'm like, I could not eat that. No, 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 no.
Hey, was this in the Village?
It was. Did you hear about this?
No, I didn't, but of course it was in the Village.
This is the sort of thing I expect from them hippies, them beatniks. There's no
beatniks. It's not Houston Street. It's not Houston.
There was no Sam Houston, for crying out loud. Good God.
All right.
You know, how many Texans died to build that street?
You realize Troy's not going to have to do a podcast for like a week and a half after this.
Oh yeah, he's got plenty of material. He's got, I don't know how long we were cut off, but he's got plenty of material, I think, for the next 6 weeks.
No, you guys are great. Keep going.
Keep going.
Hey, thanks, Wolf Blitzer. I mean, thank you. I'm sorry. What I should have said was Ted Turner, because I mean, Wolf Blitzer, he's just a vassal, you know. Come on.
Yeah, that man has no emotions. I think he's an animatronic.
I don't know. Have you seen any of the werewolf movies? He's in there.
Oh. Oh.
No, it's all cool until Wolf sees the full moon.
Stay tuned. Hurricane coming. Wow! My God, Wolf Blitzer! And he's the most boring, he'd be the most boring wolf in the world, too. I'm going to nibble very slowly on some people.
No, that's not werewolves, jerk.
No, wolves don't eat people.
Oh, God.
They don't eat
up.
People? So why are you afraid of them? because you're in a convertible because you've got the Suzuki Samurai, and a wolf will see you come in, and he's like, I need a ride.
There was a soft top on those. I'm sure that vinyl lasted for a few minutes.
I'm sure the top is all that's left of those cars. Those cars decomposed. Oh, man.
I'm telling you, the orange one, it was rocking, Narvi. I saw this orange Suzuki Samurai rolling. It was rolling like a 5-0. And he passed me. He was going like 70. And I was like, those could go 70?
Hang on, Paulie. When you say rolling, given the propensity for tipping, do you mean it was rolling sideways? Or...
No, it was driving the correct way.
Oh, okay.
Suzuki's a fine, proud company for things that run on two wheels. Let's not besmirch them.
Or roll on their hoods.
I think the original design of the Suzuki Samurai was two motorcycles that they just bolted together, and then like somebody banged out this kind of like German officer, kind of like mid-level German officer transport vehicle.
Oh, yeah.
And they were like, this is perfect. Let's sell this. This is going to be great.
Let's do it.
Wow. Well, I actually got to the end of my questions, guys. So,
okay.
Well, wow.
All your questions were basically Suzuki Samurai based. I mean, we were set for this one.
Your answers were Suzuki Samurai based. The questions weren't so much.
Welcome to Broken Skull.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. So Troy, why don't you tell us about your opinion of the state of the comic book industry and what recent moves by large media corporations to acquire and push and really support comic book titles means for the industry?
Yeah, I think a lot of the comics are pushing to go into larger stores like Walmart and GameStop are going to be carrying new comics now, and some of them even exclusive to them, which is going to hurt the smaller brick and mortar stores.
Well, I mean, don't you think that if Diamond continues to dominate the industry, that you'll always have an entree to be able to put good product into your brick and mortar?
Well, Diamond, they have a legal monopoly.
I'm aware of it.
The stuff they're putting in these big box stores is outside of the Diamond contract. It's stuff that's made exclusively for like Walmart and GameStop. And people want that stuff, so they'll run there to grab it. instead of coming and getting from these little hobby stores.
Unless they show up on one Wednesday a year at your shop and are like, where's my free shit?
They do that. Yes, they do.
Well, you know what? I mean, people that support your store and people that show up for Free Comic Book Day, I demand that you come to the store more often and think about the titles that you love. Because you know what? The people that make great titles into movies aren't always studio executives. The majority of titles that get licensed and optioned never become movies. The people that determine what is popular are you, the readers. You have got to go out and do it. You've got to buy the titles you love.
You talking to me?
And read. Yeah, I know. I am. No, I know you've got, 800 college students that are your charges. Mm-hmm. But I don't care. You need to get your ass to a comic book shop in Las Cruces.
Agreed.
All right, what's your address, Troy?
It's 125 North Main in Las Cruces, New Mexico.
Is that in New Mexico?
Please don't swat him.
Yes, please don't.
No one's going to believe that. Comic book shop, armed gunmen. Yeah, okay, yeah, right.
Well, I'd like to thank you guys for doing this interview, especially as long as it's gone.
No problem.
And no, I'm not complaining. Trust me, I love it. I'm just surprised you guys would give this much free time to me.
Oh, it ain't free. You'll pay.
You need to read the contract.
You are paying, Troy. You are.
First year Saban prices.
Ooh. No, you're far more generous than that, and we thank you. I do have to say that before you hit record on this interview, you asked us what topics might be off limits to us, and I said sex, religion, and politics.
Right.
And we've already smashed through religion and politics.
Right.
And so therefore it is.
I see where this is going.
And yeah, we are about to talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about folks and go. Jason.
Yes.
How do you feel about the fan fiction that portrays Bulk and Skull as lovers?
See, I don't know if he's going to edit this part out or not. So I'm like, oh.
Absolutely not.
Oh, God, that I can't see what my response was about to be because I thought that's where you were going to go with it. Polly has become so synonymous with a particular three-word phrase that anytime I hear it, even though most people will say this on a regular basis in their heads, anytime I hear someone say those three magic words, I'm like, hey, this is like Paul Schreier said. I'm like, you son of a bitch, how did you make that your catchphrase? But it now,
well, you know what? I mean, let me help you. Let me help you. Look, Narvi doesn't often talk about the middle years of his education where he achieved the modicum of a bachelorette. And sorry, Amy. However, we went to the same educational institution for a number of years before Jason was ready to hop into the big world of higher education. And we attended proudly and are alumni of GFYU.
That was well put. Well put, my friend.
I'd like to pay my cats for that squeal they gave at the end. That was pretty awesome.
FYU. What are you doing to that cat? God, that's funny.
They were trying to mount each other at the same time. It was awkward.
Oh, so look, we got the sex in after all.
There you go. Hashtag Bulk and Skull.
And so we got all the topics now.
Yes, we did. Thank you, Troy.
Thank you, Troy.
Thank you, guys. It was a pleasure.
Likewise, brother.
And talk!
I guess
nerdy to me. Get nerdy with me. Tell me what game that you get on. Is it card or read? What kind of class do you play, girl? In an RPG.